Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Seems to whisper, Louise. Birds in the trees seem to twitter, Louise.
Attention, Francophiles. I think you're going to enjoy the opening to the show today. Playing a little Maurice Chevalier just to change up the pace. I can't listen to Obama anymore. I mean, who would you rather listen to, Maurice Chevalier or Barack Obama? Think about it. Whatever happened to these old guys with canes and spats? I guess they're gone with the wind. Speaking of the wind, it's very windy out here on the West Coast, at least in San Francisco. Early allergy season. The pollen, forget about it. My God. This weekend was summer. Now already we got a frigid cold again. And the pollen coming off the Monterey Pines is like everything is dusted yellow. My bones hurt. My eyes are tearing. Now, look, I could talk about the news. We could talk about mandatory Arabic classes in America. We can talk about Leprechaun the Lapdog. We could talk about how Obama betrayed Great Britain. We can talk about Fatso making $20 million on a propaganda movie about 9/11 and suing the Weinsteins for an extra $2 million. But there's nothing new about liberal liars who talk the talk but don't walk the walk. There's nothing new about it because I lived in Hawaii many years ago and I couldn't understand what leasehold land meant. I never heard of it till I got there and I found out almost all the leasehold land was owned by the descendants of missionaries. The five families in Hawaii, the missionary families, the five big families. And apparently they stole the land from the Hawaiians, and then they put them up in trust, and they only leased the land out. That's the way it's worked forever. You know, there was always a saying with a wink over there in those days that the missionaries came in to do good, and they did very well indeed. So there's nothing new about Michael Moore, you know, trying to screw the Weinsteins out of it or squeeze it on the $2 million out of the Weinsteins. They're no bargain to begin with. So to me, it's one leftist trying to screw another. It's not a big story. And as far as Leprechaun the Lapdog, I mean, what can I say? We got new tape of Leprechaun the Lapdog asking the president what he and Fox News can do to better help the nation. Meaning not him, but the nation. Meaning how he can basically help Obama spin better. So there it is. I don't want to talk about it. So today I'm going to begin by talking about wine. The reason I'm going to start by talking about wine is that it's something LRB will not record or rebroadcast for the violent hordes around the world who love to listen to this infidel. And the reason I'm going to talk about wine is because I enjoy wine once in a while, and I found a red Bordeaux. I guess it has to be. Yeah, red Bordeaux that, unbelievable. If I give you the name of it, I won't be able to buy any more of it, so I can't give you the name of it. I'm going to hint at it. I'm just going to say it's my favorite since I've been a young man, which is Saint-Emilion. Saint-Emilion has always been my favorite wine, even when I was a young teacher in New York City. There used to be a French restaurant. It's gone forever. It was redeveloped, knocked down. Somewhere on the west side around where the Irish neighborhood was, the Westies were over there. There was a restaurant. I say, after I would teach, I'd walk over there alone. I was always a loner, come to think of it. You know, there was no such thing as friends after a certain age. You know, when you have friends in the first grade through the sixth grade, then when the hormones kick in, there's no friends anymore. It's all associates and congregants, but there's no friends. Particularly in a highly capitalist society, there's no such thing as a friend. It's mutual use, that's all. But since I don't need anybody, I choose to be alone. I mean, when it comes right down to it, that's the truth. So I go to this French restaurant. I was a poor teacher, but I used to splurge once a week on a French meal by myself. Now picture me sitting alone. I would have either a book or a newspaper, whatever I had. And I'd order the meal, a half a bottle of Bordeaux, and I'd sit by myself. And boy, when you finished after half a bottle, it was so beautiful. You'd walk out. You were able to take your life. You're able to take the subway. Speaking of being able to take it, I see that the kids today, there's an article out about how the kids are more comfortable in the digital world or the Facebook world than they are in the real world. They'd rather spend time online inventing fables about themselves than dealing with the hard knocks of life. So I don't know. What would you rather do? Deal with the reality of struggle, disease, rejection, loneliness, and foul breath? Or sit on the internet and make up stories about yourself and think that you're something you're not? How are these children ever going to hold a job? Well, the answer is they don't have to under Obamacare, because to age 28, they consider children. So this wine is an astounding discovery. It was $49 a bottle in a chain store out here, but I got it for $35 because if you have their card, you get a discount. It's worth about $350 a bottle. I got it for $35. I can't give you the name, but it's a sleeper that the minute I give it out, you'll wipe it out across the country. Silky textured, medium to full bodied, hedonistic, lush, pure, and long, they call it. I don't like the word hedonistic. I don't like wine descriptions to begin with. I find it somewhat phony and a little indulgent. To me, a wine either tastes good or it doesn't taste good. Now, I could write an encyclopedia about what I mean by taste. To me, if it's very dry, if it's tannicky, if it has a nice aroma to it that isn't too, too berry-like, and I get no hangover, to me, it's a great wine. But the number one thing for me in red wine is tannins. And you want to hear something funny? I like high tannin content in wines, which is, product of sandy soil. It's one of the reasons I've always loved Sante Mignon and Bordeaux in general. You know that the California wineries I hate to say it because I'm from California, but the reason they cut out this wonderful taste of a tannicky wine is because women, they wanted more women in the wine world, and women don't like a tart-tasting wine. Everything had to become sweetish, not Swedish, sweetish. And so therefore the Chardonnays became creamy and undrinkable. So there it is. That's my whole wine talk. I know what you want to hear. You want me to bash Obama? You want me to tell you the world is coming to an end? You want me to tell you that, what else? Mandatory Arabic classes in America is a sign of the times and how the Muslims are taking over Texas. It's all true. You want me to talk more about how Obama betrayed Great Britain? I mean, how much more do you want me to talk about it? It's on my website. Here's an interesting story that caught my eye this morning. Maybe I will talk about it because it's not really directly political. Here it is. It's an annual meeting of the Society for Personality and Social Psychology. It's a psychology conference. And what these psychologists normally do is discuss their research on racial prejudice, homophobia, sexism, stereotype threat, and unconscious bias against minorities. But guess what they discovered? Take a guess what they discovered. They discovered a new out-group. And guess who the out-group consisted of? The out-group was conservatives. So the doctor behind this study at the psychology convention estimates that liberals make up 80% of the 1,000 psychologists in that ballroom. When he asked for centrists and libertarians, he spotted fewer than 36 hands. And then when he asked for conservatives, he counted a grand total of 3 hands. And Dr. Haidt said, this is a statistically impossible lack of diversity. He said, polls show that 40% of Americans are conservative and 20% are liberal. And he couldn't understand how there's only 3% among psychologists. And he went on to say that social psychologists are a tribal moral community united by sacred values that hinder research and damage their credibility and blind them to the hostile climate they've created for non-liberals. You hear this? Are you listening to me? And he went on, he said, anywhere in the world that social psychologists see women or minorities underrepresented by a factor of 2 or 3, our minds jump to discrimination as the explanation, said Dr. Haidt, who called himself a longtime liberal turned centrist. But when we find out that conservatives are underrepresented amongst us by a factor of more than 100, suddenly everyone finds it quite easy to generate alternate explanations. This is a beautiful study. It confirms our bias, which confirms the reality. In other words, our bias is real. You can have a bias that's true. Our bias is that all college professors are liberal and that they hate conservatives. And it turns out this bias is correct. It's funny, I'm writing my novel, as you well know. I don't know if I should give out the title. I think it's already up on one of the sites already. It's a thriller loosely based upon a news reporter who's banned in Britain for something he allegedly said. And then it's a thriller where he's hunted down by MI5 and so on, the nefarious blah, blah, blah. It's incredible. The story's coming along great. It'll be out this July from St. Martin's Press. It's going to be, I'm telling you, a blockbuster. So I threw a line in after reading this story today as I was working on my novel, and I wrote, let's see, how did I, what was the context? It was about a Christian who was brought into a very Jewish Orthodox group, and he found himself praying with them, and I said, Jack felt like a conservative. Jack felt as different as a conservative would at Harvard. I thought it was clever. See, it shows you how I incorporate my politics even into my fiction right now, because there's actually a blurring line between fiction and nonfiction, not only between the young people who sit on Facebook all day long and change their age and their dimensions and this and that in order to have friends, but amongst the reality of our time, it's very difficult to know which way the sands are shifting. So that's my opening. I'll be right. No, play All Along the Watchtower right now. I want to hear All Along the Watchtower, and then I'm going to take another stab at the show because the allergies have me distracted to a certain. This is Jimi Hendrix. It says wine somewhere in this. So it's tied in. Don't think it's not tied in.
There's too much confusion.
I saw the worst movie of my life last night on TV. The worst. The worst. It was with Val Kilmer. Done like a year ago. The guy is a fabulous actor. I turn it off already. I heard it too many times. I can't get into it. I can't suddenly get excited about Jimi Hendrix. Break the record. It's over. Never playing it again. I've changed. 2011, I'm a new man. So anyway, I was watching this movie in bed like 10 o'clock. I click it on, I think, the Salt and Sea or something. And it's about crack addicts. Methadrine addicts. It was so bad, I didn't understand why they were glorifying meth heads. I couldn't understand why Val Kilmer would invest his talent in such a horrendous movie. But I watched almost obsessively for 30 minutes until I couldn't take the glorification of the drug addicts anymore. Just thought I would share that with you. So if you'd like to comment on the betrayal of Great Britain, Bordeaux wine, the bias of academicians, or Val Kilmer, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Different pews for different views. Flap less, coast more. Yeah, I coined that last year. Different pews for different views. Then I came up with flap less, coast more. So before the break, we were talking about French wine. We're talking about mandatory Arabic classes coming to Texas. Fatso making $20 million on a lying movie about 9/11 and now suing the Weinstein brothers for $2 million. We talked about Leprechaun, the lapdog of Obama on Fox News. But what's most interesting is our confirmed bias that social scientists are useless liberals. Because it turned out that they are. It turns out that nearly 80% of psychology professors are Democrats, and they outnumber Republicans by nearly 12-1. And Dr. Hyde told the audience that he had been corresponding with a couple of non-liberal grad students in social psychology whose experiences reminded him of closeted gay students in the 1980s. He quoted anonymously from their emails describing how they hid their feelings when colleagues made political small talk and jokes predicated on the assumption that everyone was a liberal. He himself said, "I consider myself very middle of the road politically, a social liberal but fiscal conservative. Nonetheless," he said, "I avoid the topic of politics around work. Given what I've read in the literature, I'm certain any research I conducted in political psychology would provide contrary findings, blah, 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 and therefore go unpublished." It's absolutely true. So we know that this is true. 40% of Americans are conservative, 20% are liberal, but in social psychology, it's 80% liberal. And when you look at universities in general, you find it exactly the same ratio. They found that Democrats typically outnumber Republicans at elite universities by at least 6-1 among the general faculty and by higher ratios in the soft humanities and social sciences. Well, the fact is that humanities and social sciences are filled with soft minds where there's almost no discipline, no way to prove anything, and it's based on all fraud. And of course, when you get into the heart of sciences, people are going to be more conservative, in my opinion, because you have to have a stronger mind to go into something such as chemistry or physics. Or electrical engineering than, let us say, social science. Anyone can fake social science. Anyone can make up a crappy study and call it a humanities. They're worthless fields of pursuit. Nothing good has come out of social sciences or humanities. They're just basically government jobs. in my opinion. So what do you want to talk about? See, I got callers already. I called them into the tent. See, the thing about talk radio is very simple and very complicated at the same time. You have to have the guts of a lion to go on the air every day and assume that millions of people are going to want to listen to you no matter what your mood is, no matter how your tooth is hurting you, your bones are hurting, whether you have allergies, whether you're bored out of your mind, whether you know Obama's a no good, Nick, and no one's going to stop him because he now owns Fox News. You still have to get up, and you have to get the guts together to get on the air and do your show. So instead of taking all of that head on, I figured I'd talk about the wind, allergies, and wine, and let us right back to politics. Because at the end of the day, everything is political. See, so here we are again. And I have callers now on everything I talked about. Friendship, psychologists, European wine, Arabic in schools, and of course, Val Kilmer's horrendous movie, The Sea of the Salt and Sea, which I thought was horrendous, waste of his talent. By the way, I mean, he was great in the movie when he played, what was that, The Door? Remember The Doors? He was one of The Doors. He was a door. What was that movie called? That was so good. Val Kilmer, The Doors. It was so incredibly evocative of the hippie era. You could pretty almost reach out and smell a patchouli oil. You could almost reach out and see the hairy armpits. You could almost reach out and see the no underwear under the dress. It was so well done. They so captured the whole hippie era of the fake love between people. People were so high they thought they were in love. It was really in lust, obviously. Look what it did to this country. Take a look. We're still recovering from it, if we ever did recover. You know what I'm saying? So the minute I got a caller already, says I missed the point of the movie. I'm going to take Kevin in Las Vegas. I got New York. I got Virginia Beach. I got a Houston. I got an Albany. So already the business is good. The tent is open. People are poking their noses in. They were saying, well, wait a minute. Where's Savage today? I don't hear any screaming and yelling. I hear no anger. I hear no rage. Why is he not thundering at the pulpit? Why is he not saying that it's all going to come down unless we do X, Y, and Z? The answer is because I'm not. The answer is because I'm a man of many moods. And here's another one of them.
Savage.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head?
Thank God civility is over. I mean, we had to live with that for a few weeks after Tucson. With the liberals pretending to be civil. We were afraid to talk. I never altered my show, but be civil. We need civility. We need civility like Nancy Pelosi robbing the Treasury, Obama turning us into a socialist nation of peons. That's civil. The minute we said a word, we weren't civil. That's all. Lunatics on MSNBC blaming us for the shooting when the guy was apolitical. Thank God that's all over. We can be ourselves again. Let me hear Dean Martin, will you please?
It's cut just it off. Like the fella said.
Tell me joy quick, to him.
Ain't love a kick in the head.
Miserable life. He had a projection of joy, but he wasn't a happy man. He lost his son in Vietnam, or on the way to Vietnam in a training crash. They said he was never the same again. But he never let the world see it. You see, that's the difference between a man and a wimp. That's the difference between men then and men today. Today they wear it on the sleeve. Let your feminine side. Even women don't show their emotions anymore. The women have become more like men were, and the men have become more like women were in the 50s. What am I? I'm a little off the topic here. Okay, let's go to the callers. Kevin in Las Vegas, welcome to the show.
The Salt and Sea wasn't actually a glorification of meth heads. It was what Val Kilmer's character was doing to try to get even with the two police officers that had killed his wife and shot him.
Well, I'm glad I turned the movie off because I don't want to see yet another movie making police into the enemy, okay? Every movie coming out of Hollywood, the police are evil, bad, no good, on the take. And, you know, everyone is corrupt except the vermin in Hollywood. The only people who were never targeted by Hollywood are the vermin who run Hollywood. Oh, thank God I turned it off. Val Kilmer should be ashamed of himself for wasting his talent like that. But the movie The Doors, he was great. And he was in a couple of other movies. Good-looking guy. He actually matured as a man into a good-looking man. Very few of them do. I'll name a few actors who were great when they were younger men and disappeared altogether. I can't think of one. I know who they are. I can't remember their names. But who were they who disappeared? They were really Well, here's an example. Who was the guy in The Godfather? The Cuban-American who played Sonny's illegitimate son. I don't remember his name. Huh? Andy Garcia. Where is he today? The guy was really great looking, terrific actor. What happened to him? I don't even want to see him. It's like the guy from Seattle. What happened to him? The guy who was found drunk wandering on the highway. You remember him? Big hunk, hunky blonde guy with the green blue eyes. And then he went off the rails. He looked like a homeless guy wandering around in Seattle. Where did he never was seen again in a movie? You know, what is his name? He played opposite Barbara Streisand as a psychologist or psychiatrist, speaking of social science. What was his name? Come on. Old women liked him at the time. You're drawing a blank. You know who I'm talking about. All right, it's no big deal. I'll give you another example if I could think of it, but I can't, so I won't. New York City, WR. Frank, welcome to the show. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael, yes, I would just like to say that you're absolutely correct. Most of the psychologists and healthcare, mental health care professionals in our country are usually Democratic. They're usually very liberals. I actually know one that who's very conservative. He is actually he's one of the administrators who is a member of my outpatient clinic. He's a conservative Jewish PhD, licensed PhD in psychiatry.
So he has to hide his conservatism, the way the Jews hid their Jewishness in Spain during the Inquisition. I call them Murano conservatives, those who have to hide their conservatism.
And I have to say, he's a very professional individual who's conservative, Albert Einstein School of Medicine in the Bronx. And I have to tell you, not all healthcare professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, even the police psychologists and the police psychiatrists are all liberal. Some of them are very good, sane minded.
Yeah, but it's 12, according to this study, it's 12 to 1. And the point is that these people are focused continuously on women, minorities who are underrepresented, and they jump all over it saying, oh, discrimination, 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 when it may be another reason that women don't do as well as men in science. It has nothing to do with discrimination. It could be that men are better scientists than women. And yet they're always focusing on a false assumption, which is that it's always based upon either racism or sexism or thisism and thatism. The fact is it's not true.
Yeah, but Michael, we can't change the college academia in our country.
No, I didn't say to change it. All I can do is read the article, Social Scientist Sees Bias Within, in today's New York Times. And they discovered that there's a new, they call it an out-group. They all are obsessed with research on racial prejudice, homophobia, so-called sexism, stereotype threat, bias against Muslim, unconscious bias against minorities. But suddenly the most talked about speech at this year's conference was about a new outgroup. And what was the outgroup? Conservatives. Because there's almost no, there are no conservatives to be, there's 3 out of 100 are conservative in that field. Right, Nick Nolte was I was thinking of. Nick Nolte, is he around today? Does he do, does he appear on The View with Danny DeVito? Whatever happened to Danny DeVito after he appeared drunk on The View? What a fool he made of himself. What a schmendrick. I was so bored of Danny DeVito after the third movie. The most absurd movie with Danny DeVito was when he tried to play a tough guy in the movie about the labor leader, Hoffa, with Jack Nicholson. Nicholson did a superb job. What were they put a shrimpy guy in. It's crazy. Where'd they come to put Danny DeVito in the movie Hoffa? It was the most inappropriate role I've ever seen. I'm not making fun of his size. He was a fabulous actor in the first two movies he ever did. And then I was bored to death of him. In the beginning, he was charming, he was cute, you wanted to know more about him, and then he turned out to be just a boring schlub like all the rest of them. That's all. So here we are. What do you want to talk about here? Why my bones hurt? The one thing I don't want to hear today is don't give me any remedies for allergies. I wrote the book, there are none. Nothing works. In other words, you can take medication, and you're going to pay for it down the line in another way. I just simply choose to be irritated by allergies and suffer, and eventually it goes away. You snarl like a dog to yourself. Your eyes run. Your nose runs. You're miserable. Your bones hurt, and there's nothing you can do about it because I don't belong in this environment. See, fundamentally, I'm not a Mediterranean man, but I'm living in a Mediterranean climate. I probably belong somewhere on the steppes of Norway, like, you know, way up. I think I should be living like where there's almost no light, where it's fundamentally dark most of the time and icy in like furs somewhere in a cave with five wives. Just tell him to go out and get me an elk and be quiet. More elk. That's all. Don't complain to me. Go tell it to your girlfriend. Just get me another elk sandwich. That should go over well at Harvard. Okay, what do you want to... think about, why would I be allergic to anything? Why would God put me on the earth to be allergic in San Francisco? Because I don't belong here. It's true that socially I'm allergic to the place. It's the most horrendous social place in America. It's the remnants of America. All of the refuse of America washed up in San Francisco, and some of us made incredible lives of ourselves, out of our lives, incredible successes out here. But by and large, if you look around, it's the refuse of society, posing as the avant-garde of society. We used to have a word for it in Tonga, but I can't use it on the air. It was the part of the body that that excrement. Let's leave it at that. Because I remember I was in Tonga many years ago, in 1969, collecting plants. And I stayed in a guest house, a beat-up old guest house that they had down in the South Seas in those days. And I remember one night, a big Tongan went on a bender. He broke into the bar. It was Tonga. He was allowed to. He broke into the bar. He drank a lot of the beer, and then he broke into the food locker and stole ice cream. And one of the particular school, but they had wonderful ways of expressing their racism. It was never really ugly. It was always profoundly interesting. And he had some choice words for the rampage in the Tongan guest house, which I have forgotten. Unfortunately, today you're not supposed to feel anything that is not approved by the left-wing psychological group. So unless you see a bias against gays or against minorities or against women or against against Muslims, there is no such thing as bias in America to this group. I don't know what they waste their money on it, truthfully. But, you know, in my experience in academia, everyone was liberal, except in the very hard sciences, where there were many more conservatives. And there's a reason for it. People who tend to like proof and like proof that they can test and prove one way or another whether something is or is not tend to be more conservative than those who don't want to have their biases or their feelings tested in any way. So they go into humanities or social sciences where you can test nothing. How you could ever call something a social science when there's no way to test for anything with any degree of certainty, I don't understand. They invented it. Science. Social science. It's like poli-sci. I mean, I know some bright guys who got degrees in poli-sci because they were party animals. They never intended to make an academic career out of life. They drank for 4 years. Then they went out and made a fortune in business. I respect that. But they never confused themselves. They weren't political scientists. Who's a political scientist? What's a political scientist? What does it mean? You know? Stanley in Virginia Beach, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes, I think conservatives are more concrete in their studies. When we study things like embryology or biochemistry, it gives us a better feeling for life.
Well, it also lets you know what's real and what's not real. A social scientist can make it up, and there's no way to testing whether it's true or false.
That's right. And when we study things like our slides in embryology, we really see what's going on in the human body.
God, I loved embryology when I was a young kid at Queens College. And my first time I took embryology, it was chick embryology. I was astonished by it, to see the life coming from a mere seed. It was a mere egg. It was amazing to me. It was astounding to see life emerging like that.
Yes.
Let me ask you, Stanley, do you study human embryology?
Michael, I'm a dentist by trade. I know that's not one of your... I know that's one of your favorite things.
No, yeah, okay, I'm going Friday. Don't even remind me. He's got to take out the tooth. He's got to put in the pin. He's got to put the tooth in. I'm not looking forward to Friday. But what would I do without him? I mean, I would be lacking the tooth that I'm going to have put in, right?
Right. But I did grow up on the farm, Michael, so I did see a lot of things born.
So let me ask you something that's a philosophical question. It's a theological question. If humans have souls, why do animals lack them?
Michael, I do believe that God has a place for the animals, and I think we may see the animals again. I really do.
Have you ever heard the theory that in the next world, the animals are the bosses and we're their pets. And it depends upon how we treated them in this world as to how they're going to treat us in the next world. Have you heard that theory?
I haven't heard that theory.
I heard that. I loved it. It means that when you go to the next world, whatever it may be, like your dog is going to be your boss and you're going to be his pet in that world. And depending upon how you treated him in this world is how you're going to be treated in that world. I kind of like that theory.
I have a golden retriever and I treat him really well.
Oh, I treated all my dogs well. One I didn't many years ago. I pray to God he's not waiting for me. But every other dog I treated well. Teddy is treated very well. I'm losing patience with him, though, after 6 years. I'm just like running out of patience. It's too much catering to a dog. At a certain point, it's too much catering. I think we cater to our animals too much. It's one thing to treat them well. It's another thing to like cater to them like they're a baby. They're not babies. I mean, they don't have, you know, as much as you want to have affection for an animal, and God knows they have sensitivities that are astonishing. They don't have a soul like we do. They don't have a human soul. Let's put it that way.
Right?
I mean, they're not humans. We are different. We are unique, which is why the question of abortion becomes so profoundly important.
That's right.
Thank you for the call. You got to respect human life. That's all. Houston, Max, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
George, your topic tonight, especially about Maurice Chevalier, I was stumbling around the old movie channel the other night and watched Love Parade, Michael.
So you don't mind that I'm not going too hard on Obama tonight instead?
Let's ignore him for a while. Let's go back.
Yeah, it's so boring. Every time I see him, I say, can't the con man stop it? I don't believe a word he says. Every time he opens his mouth, he's caught in a lie now. And the only people who don't know it are Fox News and Bill O'Reilly.
I enjoy getting on the old movie channel and going back in time, looking at the people, the way they acted, even though they're all in costume. But look at the surroundings, the furniture.
Did you see America? What I love was America in the 50s, where all the men wore suits in the street and a hat and the women wore gloves. It was astounding when you consider how adults dress like children today, like skateboard children. Where did that come from, that a man should dress up like his 9-year-old son?
Michael,
how did that originate, that a grown man should look like a 9-year-old boy?
It's just maddening. I remember going...
It's crazy. Never mind the boys walking around with pants hanging under their skinny white butts, looking like sissies in a jail cell. I mean, we know what that's all about, but in general, grown men dressing like the 9-year-old boy. What is that? Where's the role model there? Good job. Good job. Everything the kid does. Good job. Whatever he does, takes a swing and he misses. It's pathetic. He misses the guy. Good job for trying. The kid knows he's a failure. The kid knows he's a loser. But the father, good job, Bobby. Good job. Yell at him and tell him he's an idiot and to learn how to hit a ball, for God's sakes. He'll be a better man. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Remember how jealous you were of the hippie musicians in the 60s when you had a schlob to a job on the subway or whatever? They all had longer hair than you. They had the pretty girls. They didn't do so well when you think about it. Some very, very few did. Most of them burned out very young. You take a look at them, you're probably in better shape than most of them physically. There's a lot to be said for the guy who just stuck it out, did it the hard way. Now, how would you describe... I'm going to read you red wine styles. Light and fruity, smooth and supple, earthy and spicy, or big and bold. How would you define my show? I'm definitely not light and fruity. Am I smooth and supple? Am I earthy and spicy? Or am I big and bold? God. Full-bodied wines that have concentrated fruit and are higher in alcohol and or tannins need some age. I don't need some age. Let me put it to you that way. So let's forget big and bold. Let's go to earthy and spicy. Wines where earthy and or spicy dominate the flavors, typically medium to full body. Smooth and supple. Medium body reds that go down easily with... go down easily. Forget about it. With smooth tannins and supple fruit. No, you can't apply to a person. A genuine, rich, and well-balanced Puyac of good definition that can be qualified as classic. An unctuous, elegant, and well-crafted wine. That's how they describe this wine. Where did they get the verbiage? It's so beautiful. unctuous and elegant about a wine. Can you imagine? I can't imagine my father ever referring to a wine as unctuous. None of his friends would have known what unctuous was. That's because they drank garbage wine on holidays. They drank like Manischewitz, can puke from it. You know, I never liked wine because the only time I ever drank it was like sacramental wine. It was nauseatingly sweet. Bimmy's on the Bowery used to like that wine because it was sugary, because it was cheap. That's a guy who was across from my father's store. It was a wine thing, sold it by the jug. I always used to like the smell, the casks, going in there and smelling the casks, as much as I like the smell of a pickle barrel. Today, they're all high-end nightclubs where where you don't smell wine or pickles. What you smell is the smell of, I'll let it go at that. It's a family show. What's next on the agenda here on the Savage Nation? The call for civility. Fatso sues the Weinsteins over the money for the fake 9/11 movie that the libs couldn't. See, this is what I mean about social science. You get Fatso makes a movie where he alleges that 9/11 was a setup by the government, and Fatso makes $19.8 million on it. The reason libs like movies that are full of this kind of conspiracy is because you can't prove it or disprove it, and it creates more of the illusion that the world is unknowable. And therefore, it makes them feel good to know that they know nothing. A conservative wouldn't go to a movie by Fatso because they know he's a liar, number one. And they'd rather go to a movie with some degree of reality. I'm obsessed with watching military history or history in general, because at least I can check the facts. Now, I know that there's a new trend to say that all history is invented. I'll leave it at that.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
We are not going to focus on Obama's fibs, nor the government media complex, nor how Obama sold Britain down the river by giving away the codes to the Trident missiles. We are not going to focus on the lies that Obama told during his interview with the leprechaun, because that would be redundant. The name leprechaun says it all. And so, therefore, we're going to just have our own fun. Tea Party to launch its own national magazine. That's interesting. Bin Laden's Al-Qaeda, a shell of its former strength. By the way, remember the other day I said who funded the... Remember I said I had a dream the other night? Yesterday, I went on the air on this show and I said, over the weekend, I had a dream. And in the dream, I asked, who funded the revolution in Egypt? Because I said, no such revolution occurs spontaneously as the schmucks in the media would have you believe. I mean, the schmucks in the media tell you, a bunch of kids, it was spontaneous, they had a rave in the street. Nonsense. Planned for years by Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration and funded by a billionaire Egyptian, as I said. That's all. Next case. Amanda Knox, jailed American in Italy, wanted to throw up after TV movie. Boo-hoo. President quit smoking for a whole year despite Tea Party torments. Oh, now he's blaming a Tea Party for being a smoker. Don't you love that? Don't you love how everything is someone else's fault? The president won't even own up to being a smoker because he's addicted to tobacco. He's blaming a Tea Party now. That's an amazing. Two American teenagers killed in Northern Mexico massacre. Yeah, well, I have my own opinions about it. I won't go to Mexico. Years ago, I didn't want to go there. Two American Catholic schoolboys, another teen, was shot and killed after government attacked a car dealership in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. Part of a deadly spree that killed 9 people over the weekend. What is this with Mexico? Why don't we have a military on the border to stop this disease from coming over the border? What is this rubbish? that we need to be in Korea and we don't need to be on a border with Mexico. If we don't stop the spread of this disease, we're going to have it here in this country very shortly, as if we don't already have it already. That's all. The FBI is busy looking for hookers instead of looking for members of MS-13. You know, I saw that the other night on MSNBC. I don't like the channel at any level. So they have the one where they sting the perverts. I don't like that guy who does it. I think he's actually a bigger pervert than the perverts. When, you know, he gets him in the house, I'll be right down. You know that one, right? Where they have a police person pretending to be a child, and the poor schmuck comes in. The idiot comes in with condoms, and he sits there in the kitchen. Now comes that idiot from MSN, from NBC. Hi, I don't even know his name, Chris, whatever. I'm with NBC. And instead of shutting his mouth, the guy says, sit down, and he asks some questions, and he answers it. Because I saw another show about some Vietnamese madam who exploits young women from Vietnam by running like massage parlors here in New York, San Francisco. When they came in there with the cameras, they asked her, she said, I know nothing. The woman was smarter than these guys who get caught. Whatever they said to it, FBI with masks on their face, all over a bunch of hookers, they go in with machine guns. But MS-13's running around with tattooed necks. There's nowhere to be seen, but they're breaking down doors of massage parlors. I don't understand who's running the show, but it doesn't seem like they know what they're doing. Anyway, they break in there, and the poor girls are sitting there, whatever, and they say to the madam, some old woman, she says, I'm just a laundress, I know nothing. Every question NBC asked her, she says, I don't know anything, I'm only a laundress. Now, that's a smart woman. But now, conversely, you go to the other show to catch a predator, the guy asks questions, and these idiots answer them, incriminating themselves step by step. And then he says, you're free to go now. The guy goes out, and the brave police throw him to the ground and handcuff him. What kind of nonsense is this? What do they have to throw him to the ground for? Where'd that come from? They run out, big, beefy cops with machine guns, and throw the predators to the ground. The guys are so scared at that point, they throw themselves on the ground, I think to myself. Which is why I love to watch television. It's so darn entertaining. As I say, I wouldn't go to Mexico. Not at all. The boys had crossed the border from El Paso for a party on Friday night and were gunned down on Saturday afternoon while checking out a used car that one of them was interested in buying. The Chihuahua State Attorney General's office said, that's kind of a oxymoron, a Chihuahua State Attorney General. I mean, that's the whole statement. Heartbreaking. Found at least 60 bullet casings appeared to have been fired from an AK-47, the weapon of choice for drug gangs in northern Mexico. Can you believe this? Why would anyone go to Mexico on vacation? They could go there for any reason. What do you think? They're coming over the border by the millions. They want to get out of their own country. All they want to do is send money home so more of them can come over. So what do you want to talk about? The bias within social science? That's a factor of more than 100 against conservatives and they don't even find it. But God forbid someone finds homophobia or prejudice against racial prejudice, homophobia, so-called sexism, unconscious bias against minorities and Muslims, and right away they're writing papers about it. When in fact, the real minority in the social sciences and in this country in general, in academia in particular, is the bias against conservatives. It's certainly in the media. We know that for a fact. I'm not to complain about it. They gave me a living. Did you ever think that if there was no bias against conservatives in the media, I wouldn't have a job and you never would have heard of me? Did you ever think that if the media was fair-minded and gave you the news you wanted, you never would have turned into talk radio years ago when I started in 1994 and caused a cyclone when I first began here in San Francisco on my local station at that time, KSFO? Can you imagine? Can you imagine what I did when I appeared on radio? People never heard anything like it. In the most liberal city in America, suddenly a conservative voice appeared. People were shocked. They were stunned. Why should they be so stunned? I wasn't alone, obviously. Millions of people are conservatives. In fact, polls showed at least 40% of Americans are conservative and only 20% are liberal. And believe me, I think the polls are off on that. I would say more like Americans are more like 50-55% a conservative. And if you add in fiscally conservative, it's even higher. Socially, I wouldn't know if it's that high. I would say yes, maybe 40% are socially conservative and only 20% of Americans are liberal. That leaves 40% are in between. They don't know who they are. They're on both sides. But you rarely see them in academia. You know, we know that. In a 2000 study of both elite and non-elite universities, elite means that the drugs are better and your child doesn't have as much of a chance of getting shot buying the drugs because they're usually sold by professors. A non-elite university means your kid has to buy the drugs on the street or in the parking lot of the non-elite university. Anyway, in that study, they found that 80% of psychology professors are Democrats, outnumbering Republicans by nearly 12 to 1. So what does that tell you that you don't already know? Nothing. It tells you go into hard science, you find more conservatives. Why? Because conservatives like facts. They don't like anything fuzzy, like social science, which is an oxymoron. I mean, what does social science mean? Nothing. It has no meaning, the word social science. Anthropology. Believe me, one of my degrees is in anthropology. And I enjoyed the field. It was a great hobby at the time. I loved it, but there was no science involved. The only science in the master's degree that I did was from the botanical side because the plant was what it was. And I had to use real science and real Latin names to define it as a genuine genus and species. But as far as the anthropology, the first thing I learned in anthropology was this. The anthropologist biases the person they're studying or the group they're studying. What does that mean? The minute you enter a village, and I entered many a village, I spent many a lonely night in Fijian and Tongan villages, and believe me, I didn't enjoy it at all. It wasn't romantic. It was horrible. It was like a prison to me. It was horrible. But I did it because I wanted to, I don't know what I was trying to prove. I wanted to discover something. I wanted to prove that I could be like, you know, Alfred Russel Wallace in modern times, whatever. The minute, let us say, a Westerner appears in a third world village, the people behave differently. They start to behave differently because it's a stranger in their midst. And so if the anthropologist reports what he sees going on in that village, he's not reporting what actually goes on in the village when he's not there. So therefore, anthropology is not a science in any way, shape, or form. I mean, there are some elements that are interesting, like lineage and things of that nature. But until you get into the biology of anthropology, it has no meaning whatsoever. From the point of view of science, it's entertainment. For example, many of you have heard of the anthropologist so-called Margaret Mead. She was very famous back in the 40s. Margaret Mead wrote a book on a coming of age in Samoa where she implied that sex was frequent and sex was open and sex was free. She made it up. It was a lie. They were a very different society than that projected by her because she imposed her perverted views upon the subject, so to speak, which were the Samoan people. Did you know any of this? You probably don't know it to this day. It's the same with Kinsey. Kinsey was a complete pervert and a deviant. And all of what is known today about sexual research is based upon a fraud, Alfred Kinsey, who was a complete sicko. Well, anyway, I made my point. That's why I talked about wine earlier. But there are some news stories as well, if you care to talk about them. We've done enough of that. Babysitter who knocked out on NyQuil found guilty of reckless assault. Oh, God. What's this one just came out? Oh, this is an interesting study. Hal Berry, whatever that is. Hal Berry is a person, I think. Hal Berry? Halle Berry? Hal Berry? I know. And her ex, Gabriel Aubrey, disagree on custody issues and now on their daughter's race. Her mother says, my daughter is black because of a century-old one-drop racial theory. She said, I'm black and I'm her mother, and I believe in the one-drop theory. Now, if a white person ever said they believed in the one-drop theory as to making a person black, they'd probably be put in jail for racism. That just shows you the extent of the bias in the media. At least it does, in my opinion. So, what does the one-drop theory mean? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I ran all the way.
Impalas, I ran all the way home. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, we're going to shift to another song. We're going to do Come Softly to Me by the Fleetwoods next on the new Rock and Roll Tuesday on the Savage Nation. We're going to break that record because it's a little too soft for the Savage Nation. Let us go to something real fruity, a white sport coat and a pink carnation by Marty Robbins. That's the next one we're going to do here. I always play this in the spring. like in May. It's not May yet. It's still February. Plenty of snow to go yet. Turn it off already. It's too early for it. I remember when that song came out. I wish to God I had a white sport coat. Instead, I had dead man's pants. No, I remember when that song came out, a white sport coat, I was so envious of normal American boys who had white sport coats and ties and went to, like, cotillions. And I didn't understand any of it. I was working after school. Then I worked in the summer. I'm not complaining about it. It did me good. I mean, I'm still working, and I enjoy working because I don't know any better. There are normal people who don't work anymore when they don't have to. There's a whole philosophy on retirement that I've never discussed. I don't know whether to admire people who can retire successfully or not admire them. I know I could never retire. On the other hand, I get up every day and say, why am I making enemies and knocking myself out every day on the Savage Nation when I don't have to do it anymore? And, of course, I answer it because I have to do it. I am required to do it by law. It's on my birth certificate. You shall work until the last days of your life. You shall work as hard as you have ever worked the older you get. You shall single-handedly try to save Western civilization. You shall work diligently against the enemy within, and you shall be rewarded in the next world for your travails, my son, I hear coming down from heaven. I don't hear anything from heaven. In fact, I knocked and no one was home, to be honest with you. That's sacrilegious, but I'm in good company when I get into that mood, because the truth is, who knows? Some days I range between absolute awe over God's control of everything, and then the next day I feel like, who is the sadist in the sky? I know that sounds sacrilegious to all of us who are religious in one regard, but, you know, you see a baby with cancer. You want me to go down the list, the litany? I get into this lamentation phase during this period of the year. It's around my birthday. It's too early for it, though. It's like February. My birthday's not till the end of March. I go into lamentations. It's earlier this year because of the allergies. It provokes lamentations, like Job's tears. It's an amazing thing, but you look at the babies in the hospital. They didn't hurt anybody. What does the sadist in the sky want from them? And then you look at the evil people in this world. They're enjoying themselves, you say. You don't have the, how do you put two and two together? So you have to say, all right, then you go through the whole thing in the next world. Oh, come on, the next world. How about this world? How about this world? You take a look at the fat slob Michael Moore. Puts out a fraudulent movie about 9/11, which blames the United States. And the moronic liberals go for it because they want to believe that the country they live in, that gives them the very breath that they have, is no good. He makes $19 million, and now he's suing the Weinstein brothers because they held back $2.5 million from him, allegedly. You hear? There's a certain justice in it, by the way. Michael Moore suing the Weinsteins. In a certain way, there's a value to that lawsuit. But I won't involve myself with that, truthfully. What do you want to talk about? Heaven? Earth? Halle Berry, whatever it is, it's not a strawberry, it's not a raspberry, it's not a blueberry. A Halle Berry says to Ebony Magazine, my daughter Nala is black because of the one-drop theory. Do you have any idea how ignorant this woman is? Do you have any idea how insulting she is to her own people, to the black people? Now, she's of mixed race. So she has a daughter where her father is Caucasian and she is of mixed race, and they're fighting over the child. She says, my daughter is black because of the one-drop theory. Do you know that the one-drop theory was used in early America by racists to deny black people the right to vote? And here is a woman of mixed heritage who's using a racist theory to say her daughter is black in order to control the outcome of a divorce, of a divorce settlement. It's unbelievable to me. She says, I feel like she's black, the actress told the magazine. You hear? How's that for liberalism? I feel like she's black. I feel like she's black. She said, I'm black and I'm her mother, and I believe in the one-drop theory, Berry said, referencing the 20th century law that classified anyone as black if they had any African ancestry. But they should add that that was used to deny black people the right to vote. How can you turn it around like this? Oh, the Indian thing. Savage. I get it.
Brawlers, a charred and barbecued ribs, you get the treat of the week. But when you dig that real fine jive with the welcome beat, fall in there, lose your lead.
I don't know whether this falls in the category of liberal, conservative, or just plain stupid, but an actress named Halle Berry, who is of mixed race, is married to a white man, they have a child, and she says, I feel that she's black because she has, I want to quote her exactly. She says, she said, I'm black and I'm her mother and I believe in the one drop theory, Barry said. Now, you should know that the 20th century law that classified anyone as black if they had even a drop of African ancestry was a racist law. It was to deny blacks the right to vote. And here she is. Here's this idiot. She's an idiot. She's moronic. The one drop rule meant you were contaminated and you were privileged and you lost your privileges of being white. It was purely a racist ideology. And now Halle Berry is referring to it as a badge of honor. What is wrong with this woman? How does such ignorance pass for celebrity in our society? It's astonishing to me how she would give an interview like this to Ebony magazine. What a story this is. I mean, it's a very uncomfortable topic to talk about. But to me, it's quite, it's ignorant to not even understand the history of our own black people, how they suffered from the one-drop theory, to now turn it around and use it as a privileged idea. So I don't even want to get into it because it becomes very uncomfortable and then people start to squirm about it. To me, people are people. And I judge people by how they behave personally than what their ethnic background is. You can say that there are stereotypes that apply. I don't know that that's true in this world anymore. I think people are pretty much homogenized, especially in the United States of America. They're fairly homogenized in behavior, you know, and it has very little to do with racial origin, except in specific circumstances where there are ghettoized versions of individuals, whether they be of any race in particular. Then you're going to be able to stereotype. But already we're going where I don't want to go. So she becomes just as racist as the old slave owners. It's unbelievable to me. How does this get away? How does this happen? Okay, let's move on. Pittsburgh, PA. Dana, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
It is interesting to be a PhD sociologist who was an undercover conservative, and it was like being a Navajo code talker in World War II.
I've always called conservatives in academia the Murano conservatives, in reference to Jews who acted like they were Catholics during the Inquisition to avoid being persecuted and practiced their religion in the darkness of night in the basements of Spain. So what was it like? Tell us your trial, your travails, Dana.
Well, the main travail that changed me, and I went to a liberal arts undergrad and never really experienced any sort of challenges to my conservatism, even though I was completely being indoctrinated with liberal perspectives in a sociology department. Getting to grad school, it was during 9/11 when 2 days after it happened, I'm a teaching assistant, and my professor's saying, think about what's the fault of the United States in causing 9/11. And I was 22 years old at the time wondering, are you kidding me? I mean, I thought my world was coming to an end. And I
Well, that's like saying, that would be like on December 7, 1941, saying, think about why the poor Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And think about what those evil white men did on the ships to deserve being sunk in Pearl Harbor. It's the norm in academia to think and to teach this way, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And to sit there in front of students that are 18, 19 years old, 3 days later crying their eyes out. I have people that are ROTC Marines, and I'm sitting there looking at them, and I'm saying, we need to consider what we did here. And I couldn't believe these things were coming out of my mouth. And I have students they were aghast. They didn't know what to say, and I didn't know what to say to them. And that was my first realization that, wow, I was thinking differently, but I never was able to express it. And even through the whole program, I did not. But now, with what's going on in the world in Egypt and in our country, I have all the books. I've read everything that they're talking about, and I know what's being said and what's truly being done. And it just
right. You have an indoctrinated generation. It goes all the way up to Obama's level. He's an indoctrinated child. He acts like he's an adult who is independent of thought. In my opinion, he's an indoctrinated child, and he is still espousing anti-American mentality in virtually every one of his social policies. In virtually every one of his speeches, other than when he fakes it, the man is still an anti-American because he's been indoctrinated since childhood in the way you're describing.
Yes, and I think the one... hope that people like me have is that we can synthesize this information, we can see it for what it is, we're looking underneath the surface, and we can listen to people like you still. And that's what we hope for, and that hopefully you can.
Well, it's still legal for me to broadcast. It hasn't been made illegal yet by the FCC under Obama.
For me to listen to you, who knows if the phone's tapped.
Oh, don't be silly. They're not tapping. They're busy investigating prostitution. The FBI is busy investigating prostitution and dog racing in Pennsylvania. Dana, let me send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I still have a number of them to give away, and I'll do so right now. What would you like to talk about? Any topic is fair game. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let me go to michaelsavage.com and trigger your outrage. I will provoke your outrage. Egyptian billionaire funds anti-government protest. Bingo, I was right. Told you about the dream yesterday. I come to the microphone. I said I had a dream where I was told in my dream by my inner mind, if you want to call it that, that someone funded this revolution in Egypt, because these things don't just happen. They're funded and they're planned. And here it turns out that Naguib Sawiri says there's a, well, he's the one who did it, an Egyptian billionaire. Mandatory Arabic classes coming to Texas schools. Islamist rebel says he ordered a Russian bombing. Remember that? Remember they bombed Russia? You forgot about that. U.S. envoy has business link to Egypt. I'm shocked. I am shocked that someone in the State Department is personally profiting from the unrest in Egypt. I'm stunned. I thought he was a public servant. That caught me off guard. Multiculturalism will fail. A prominent voice in Canada's Muslim community said British Prime Minister David Cameron was spot on when he insisted British multiculturalism has failed. No kidding. And other stuff. There's other stories on michaelsavage.com. Plenty of stories. I don't want to read them. Abortionist accused of murders pocketed $1.8 million a year. South Dakota GOP takes aim at Obamacare with gun bill. You know, I've never done a gun show. It's like the third rail of radio, of talk radio. I knew some people in the early days that they would do a lot of gun shows. They lasted about 3 months. I own guns. I don't sit there polishing them with my eyes crossed, you know, drinking Jim Beam, staring at pictures. I mean, I rarely touch them. Once in a while, I go to the range, and, you know, if you're good enough at 20 feet, what more do you need? When you think about it, what's a gun for? 20 to 30 feet in your house, 10 feet is even better. You know what a gun range should really be doing is, like, they should have a bed in a If I opened the gun range, I would set up cots in the, you know, like in little alleyways, the stalls that you use in the gun range, and you'd get to lay down. And there would be like a mock dresser with your gun in the dresser drawer, and a bell would ring, and you'd have to jump up, pull a gun, and fire in the dark at a target within 10 or 15 feet. Now, that would be good. You know, I love guys who are like, you know, I go past a studio. I have to laugh. I appreciate expertise. I really do. In my bicycle riding, I go past a studio where they teach Taekwondo. So it's all white guys. They look like puffballs to me, and they're usually older men, and they like, it's so absurd. They come. The guy walks towards the other guy, and he lays down on the ground. Walks towards him, lays on the ground. Walks towards him and lays on the ground. Walks towards him and lays on the ground. All this gentle motion. Now, you think you could translate that into a street fight with a guy who's going to kick you in the groin and punch your lights out? Do you actually think a guy who studied Taekwondo is going to stand a chance against a thug who can punch him right in the nose as fast? You see, you don't understand something. A predator doesn't give you a chance to put on a white uniform and bow to him. A predator doesn't tell you what he's going to do. A predator will strike without you even knowing he struck. You'll be on the ground. It doesn't mean it's not good exercise. But there you go again. So it's the same thing with shooting ranges. I know guys who are crack shots with a gun in a range. They line it up and they have the bullets and they have the gun and they have the target and they press it and they can hit a bullseye at 20, bang, boom, bing. Well, what would be the difference in that? I mean, there'd be a big difference between that setting and sleeping in your bedroom and having an invader come in. Could you pull a gun half asleep and fire the gun with any degree of accuracy? I don't know. So that's why I say it's all kind of, it's esoteric to me, all of this martial arts, to a great extent. It doesn't mean there are not martial artists who can kill an average guy in a street fight. There certainly are. Particularly, there are forms of martial arts that are built around street fighting. There's an Israeli Kav Magra, I think. Kav Maga, I don't know what it is. I went to a studio once. Just going in there, I got a, my back went out of alignment. I just walked into the studio, walked out, had a backache for a month just going into the studio. It's an incredible martial art. It's, you know, I asked the guy who runs it, this Israeli martial art, Krav Maga. I think I'm mispronouncing it. So he said to me, basically, it's using anything from a chair to a jiu-jitsu to fell the opponent. In other words, if there's a chair, pick it up and break it over the guy's head. That's, it was developed by a Czech man of Jewish heritage and taught to the Israeli Defense Forces, and it's allegedly incredibly lethal as a martial arts form because it incorporates so many different moves from so many different angles. And I watched the people work out. It's so exhausting, it's beyond belief. But as I say, the reason I didn't go back was just simply watching them, I got a backache. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. Tis twilight time.
Started out as a weird show. I didn't want to do a show. I didn't want to do any politics. So I talked about wine. I talked about social science, bias, movies. Now, here's a conclusion to this hour that you're going to love. Are you an allergy sufferer as I am? Well, I hope you don't take any medication because I don't. And the reason I don't is that I've always known that if my body is exhibiting symptoms of allergy, allergic reaction, it's my body getting rid of the allergen. And in the case of pollen, for example, if your eyes are running or your nose is running, your body is shedding that which is provoking your body to, your immune system is provoked to marshal various antibodies and such, and to get rid of the antigen. In this case, the pollen is an antigen. Okay, so what does it have to do with anything? Study just comes out today, minutes ago. Allergies linked to brain tumor protection. Protection. Hay fever, dog, and other allergies may protect sufferers from certain types of brain tumors, a new study suggests. Isn't that beautiful? All that suffering pays off. In surveys of hospital patients, individuals with glioma, a common form of brain and spinal cancer, were less likely than cancer-free individuals to report having allergies. University of Illinois Chicago researchers report online Feb 7 in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. This is amazing. Several teams had previously explored the link between allergies and glioma, said UIC epidemiologist Bridget McCarthy, who led the study. So they quizzed about 1,000 hospital patients with or without cancer about their allergy histories. And they did a breakdown, and I'm not going to read you all the details. And they found this. They found the more allergies that you have, the more protected you were, says McCarthy, an oncologist at UIC. Glioma is not the first cancer to be negatively correlated with common allergies. Not the first to be negatively correlated with common allergies, says Michael Scheuer, an oncologist at Baylor Medical College in Houston. This is incredible news for people like me. So it means all my suffering has not been in vain. And all of my common sense in not taking any allergy medication has been correct, because I kind of read it from the point of view of a naturopathic point of view, which is that if you have a headache, it's because you either ingested something or exposed to something that caused the headache. And if you suppress the headache, how are you going to cure the underlying cause of the headache? And I've always been into underlying causes. So if I always had pain, I usually live with the pain until I can sort through it and either ride it out or figure out why it was, you know, why it was induced. Same with allergies. I have taken allergy medicine over the years, and I always got sicker from it in time because I always knew I was basically suppressing what should be excreted from my body through the tears or through the mucus. So there it is. It says allergy-prone people may fight off colorectal and pancreatic cancer and even childhood leukemia better than sniffle-free people, according to some studies. On the other end of the spectrum, allergies that cause asthma may spur lung tumors. Just why these links exist, they say, isn't clear, but here it is. Allergy sufferers mount heightened immune responses to some foreign or dangerous cells and chemicals, says Scheuer, who was not involved in the study. And cancer cells are certainly dangerous. Human immune systems naturally seek them out. The immune systems in people with allergies may just do it better. Why? because they have an overactive immune system, and maybe that's been protecting them from the development of tumors, he says. That is incredible. Thank you. In December, Shoyer and his colleagues reported finding a link between risk for one type of glioma and use of the antihistamine drugs like diphenhydramine, the active ingredient in Benadryl. Whoa! The Chicago team did not find such a link. Shoyer says Benadryl users shouldn't worry. He says brain tumors are very, very rare tumors, and a lot of people take antihistamines. Well, all right, I'll let it go with that. He suspects that in a small set of individuals with a genetic predisposition to brain cancer, antihistamines may slow down the immune response, giving cancer cells an opening. Of course it does. Antihistamines means it attacks your histamine reaction, or let us say it limits your histamine reaction, and thereby it's limiting your autoimmune immune response. You know, back in 1986, I wrote a best-selling book that Houghton Mifflin published called Maximum Immunity. It's a very proud book. I'm very proud of that book. It went into six languages. I have copies of it in Swedish, Danish. The French stole it from me. A French author stole the book. That's typical because he's French. He couldn't help it. Like, why did he walk across the and then sting him? You know, what's that one? The sting, what's the animals with the sting across the creek? I don't even know what it is anymore. The scorpion and the frog. Scorpion says to the frog, can you walk me across the creek? Can you swim across me on your back? I won't sting you. The frog says, but you're a scorpion, you will. He says, no, I won't. You're my friend. Ride me across the creek on your back, says the scorpion. And because you're so nice to me, Mr. Frog, when we get to the other shore, I swear I'll go my way, you go yours, I won't sting you. So the nice frog swims across the river, gets the scorpion to the other side. He's about to shake his paw goodbye when the scorpion stings him. And as he's on his back dying, the frog looks up and says, why'd you sting me? The guy says, because I'm a scorpion. That's why. So that's when I say the French stole my book, you know. To me, it's the same thing. Talk about stereotypes. And now, look, I started being positive about French wine, so don't accuse me of anything. So this is good news. This is very good news. That's amazing. So all of this sneezing, my eyes running and itching and complaining. Allergies linked to brain tumor protection. Hay fever, dog, and other allergies may protect sufferers from certain types of brain tumors, a new study suggests. Individuals with a common form of brain and spinal cancer, glioma, were less likely than cancer-free individuals to report having allergies. It's complicated for the average reader to understand what that means. It's written in a science ease. They always put everything in like this conflicted way where you don't know what the hell they're talking about. In plain English, if you suffer from allergies, you're less likely to get brain tumors because your immune system is more active. How's that for translation into language that the average listener can understand? And I would recommend you really seriously consider living with your allergies and stop taking all the medication. Okay? Some say they take Benadryl and it didn't matter. You know what? You know, Benadryl is a very interesting drug, by the way. It's a very interesting medication. It's a good sleeping pill. I would never overuse it. The reason you're able to sleep is because it puts your entire immune system to sleep. So your heightened responses are limited. And finally, you can go to sleep. Good, all right. So then all the bad cells like it. All right, he's sleeping now. Now's the time to spread. I don't want to put it in too much of a cartoon. Well, it's been fun so far. There's another big hour on the Savage Nation. The website is michaelsavage.com. And tomorrow there's another day of the making of many shows. There is no end. It comes from Ecclesiastes. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here it is. the notes for the Savage Nation. The big story is how Obama betrayed Great Britain. Incredible editorial today in Investor's Business Daily, where they seem to be listening to my show because the opening line is exactly what I've been saying for 2 days now. Here's what they said. When spies give military secrets to a foreign power, it's espionage. When an American president does it, betraying an ally to befriend a longtime foe, what do we call it? According to diplomatic cables obtained by Britain's Daily Telegraph, mined from the thousands of classified documents released by WikiLeaks, the U.S. government, meaning Obama and Hillary Clinton, agreed to provide Russia with information on the British nuclear deterrent as part of the deal behind the ratification and signing of the New START Treaty. Specifically, Obama provided Moscow with the serial numbers of each Trident missile in the British ballistic missile submarine inventory. The Russians already know how many Tridents the British have, but can't be sure. British policy has been to refuse to confirm the exact size of its relatively tiny arsenal. Well, nevertheless, the Russians want to find out whether Britain has more missiles than we say we have. And having unique identifiers will help them, right? So why did we, according to the Telegraph, have to ask Britain in 2009 for permission with detailed and classified information on the British Tridents, permission that was denied? According to the leaked memo, the Russian Federation will receive unique identifiers for each of the missiles transferred to the UK, which is more information than was disclosed on the START. So Hillary Clinton seems to have gone above and beyond the call of duty. The British have quietly gone along with the State Department explanation. But then why wouldn't they? It wouldn't serve the new government of Prime Minister David Cameron to acknowledge, after a series of snubs and insults from this side of the pond, that the U.S. has just thrown it under the strategic bus. That Obama would betray Britain's nuclear secrets would not be surprising, since we are quite willing to betray our own. Before a recent U.N. conference on nuclear nonproliferation, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced, beginning today, the United States will make public the number of nuclear weapons in our stockpile and the number of weapons we have dismantled since 1991. Okay? I call it treason. When spies give such information, it's called espionage. When American presidents or secretaries of state do it, what is it called? I report, you decide. This is the Savage Nation. Now, there are many other stories. Mandatory Arabic classes are coming to America. A school district in Texas has proclaimed that its students will be required to learn Arabic, and they're not stopping at the language. Culture, government, art, traditions, and history will also be part of the curriculum. It's only a matter of time until the Muslim religion is included on that list as well. Are you surprised that radical Muslims and their allies on the left have pushed this program first in Texas, normally such a conservative state? How do you fear Obama will move to introduce more Muslim culture if he wins a second term? By the way, this is being funded by the federal government. Your federal government at work. Johnny can't add, but he can chant in Arabic. The greedy left. After making $20 million on a propaganda movie about 9/11, fatso Michael Moore is suing the producers, the Weinsteins, for an extra $2 million. Leftist website owner Arianna Huffington just sold her site to AOL and pocketed $18 million on her own. She sold it for $325 million. You see, libs talk a lot about the poor, but they seem to be doing pretty well themselves. In fact, that's how it's always worked. And then, of course, we have Leprechaun the Lapdog. Continuing to play his interview with Obama before the Super Bowl, Bill O'Reilly revealed that he asked Obama what he and Fox News can do to better help the country. He was basically asking how he could help Obama better spin his lies. Is this the last nail in the coffin of O'Reilly's career? Have you ever heard an interviewer publicly ask a president what the interviewer could do better for him? This is news? I don't think so. I think this is called propaganda. But then again, I'm not surprised. It was I, Michael Savage, who did a speech back in 98 entitled Beware the Government Media Complex. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Egyptian billionaire funds anti-government protest. Didn't I just say the other day that I had a dream that someone funded this, that this was not spontaneous? Who was right, me or you? Islamist rebel says he ordered the bombing in Russia. He has a name. And he wants an independent Muslim state governed by Islamic law in Russia's Caucasus region. Multiculturalism will fail. UK's Cameron, Europe must wake up to Islamic threat from within. Sure, he ought to wake up first. Angry Muslim crowd attacks churches in Indonesia. 1,000 Muslims, religion of peace, stormed a courthouse and burned 2 churches in Indonesia after a Christian was sentenced to 5 years for distributing leaflets deemed insulting to Islam. The crowd demanded the death penalty and burned the churches to the ground. Didn't make it to your newspaper? Attention, Jews. More evidence is emerging of anti-Semitism at the Egypt protests, not being played on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News. Nevertheless, we have the pictures of the Jewish star being used as a hate symbol by your friends in Egypt. Let's go to the bottom of michaelsavage.com. First Lady tells us eat carrot sticks, serves kielbasa at White House. SEC officials, the Security Exchange, remember them? Well, they apparently looked the other way while Madoff was bilking billions. They've now taken spots at major law firms in America. Isn't that terrific? Talking about corruption, take a look at the cop's sick pay in Nassau County. $16 million in 1 year in their unused sick days on top of other so-called incentives. How can this country hang in there? Finally, bill would ban sales of toy guns to kids. That's right. Bill would ban sales of toy guns to kids. So that when your child grows up and he has to defend himself, I guess he could always get out a whistle and go onto Facebook and ask for help. Well, that's it from MichaelSavage.com.
Savage.
A lot of people underestimate the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, it sounds like it's a fraternity in Vermont or something. It isn't. The Muslim Brotherhood is the wellspring of most of the radical Islamic terrorism that we've been facing today, from Hamas to Al-Qaeda. Two of Osama bin Laden's principal teachers, Muhammad Qutb and Abdullah Azzam, came out of the Muslim Brotherhood. Ayman al-Zawahiri, his deputy, comes from the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. Therefore, you're dealing with an organization that has been committed to violence. And if you look at the statements of its leaders, they still are committed to violence and to the use of force against American troops in Afghanistan and Iraq.
And yet our president is in favor of a representative government in Egypt, which of course means the Muslim Brotherhood. They are now cited every time you see the opposition, you see the words Muslim Brotherhood. So anybody who's in favor of overthrowing Mubarak should think twice, as I did from day one, because I realized that as dictatorial as he is, well, do you want the devil you know or the devil you don't know? You know the old phrase? Apparently we know the phrase, but the administration doesn't, or do they? See, that's the real question. Do they know what they're doing here, or don't they know what they're doing here? Okay? And there we are. We've talked about Bill O'Reilly's interview with Barack Obama. And it's my allegation that it was a softball interview because he didn't ask one question about... I would say that if you took the pulse of the American people, they want us out of Afghanistan, they want the debt ceiling controlled, they don't want it raised, and they want illegal immigration curtailed, if not eliminated. Yet not one of these questions came up. It was the same as years ago during the presidential debates when the NPR... baggy-eyed Bolshevik used to ask set-up questions during presidential interviews. So instead of the baggy-eyed Bolshevik, Bill Lehrer, we now have Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly is a new Bill Lehrer, or whatever his first name is. Which, again, it doesn't mean I hate him. I don't. It's not the point. The point is I gave a speech years ago, beware the government media complex. And believe me, you should be aware of it, because the government media complex has never been stronger than it is today. Again, I need to repeat this over and over again. That is, I have a job to do. My job is to call him as I see him. Admittedly, I make a lot of people very angry. Some of them hate me for my views. But either we live in America or we don't live in America. Either we live in a free society or we don't live in a free society. Either I have freedom of the press or freedom of speech or I don't. And so therefore, until it's illegal to express my opinion, I will express my opinion. I recognize the office of the presidency has all the power in the world. If they could burn a country to the ground to... enforce their agenda. What is one man to them? If they're willing to blow up an entire nation and upset the whole world order in order to impose their leftist agenda, no more pencils, no more books, no more teachers' dirty looks. That's all there is to it. And if you look at the pictures coming out of Cairo now, it's gone from 1 million people to several thousand, and the several thousand who are left are the religious fanatics. It's the religious fanatics being put in the Tahrir Square by the Muslim Brotherhood. All the Twitterers are gone. No longer do you see the Western-educated dungaree dolls with the Blackberries twittering away. They're, I guess, back to work or trying to get some water into their apartments. All that are left are the fanatics. And so, therefore, if you're on the side of the fanatics, you have a right to be on the side of the fanatics until it comes home to roost. Now I'll take your calls on all of these topics and more. 1-800-449-8255. New York, WOR Joe, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Michael Savage, you are so courageous. It's too bad that Ronald
Reagan... No, I'm not courageous. I'm a fool. I'm a fool for taking on so many powerful people like this by calling them out as I'm supposed to do. I feel like I'm absolutely becoming more and more isolated and more of a voice in the wilderness. I see this almost nowhere anymore. On the internet, and very, very rarely do you see this or hear this in the media. Everyone has been cowed by the communist regime in America.
Tremendous. Dr. Savage, you had no harm or would offer no harm or damage to England, and you were banned.
Right.
Obama has absolutely neutralized them.
Yes.
Has obliterated,
right.
Has removed their defenses.
Right, right.
I know he's head of state.
Right.
In fact,
right. Should he be banned from entering England? He's the most dangerous man. He committed more damage to Britain's national security than everyone on the terrorist list.
Absolutely. And what would he do to our country?
See, but it's all a matter of degree. It's been said years ago, if you steal a dollar, you go to jail. If you steal $10 million, you work for Smith Barney. I'm just choosing one company out of many. And if you can steal $100 million, you become a director of one of the departments of the United States government. See, it's all a matter of degree. If you steal a necklace, you go to jail. If you rob the entire jewelry chain of all of its profits by manipulating their loans, you go to work for the Treasury Department. You understand how that works?
Does England respond to this? Have they responded to it? Does it matter to them?
No. Well, did they respond? I don't know. What did Cameron have to say? They won't take me off the list of people banned, but I'm sure they'll give Obama the king's greetings when he arrives, even though he sold him down the river to the Russians.
Make him a knight.
Make him a knight in shining armor, that's all. A knight in shining armor. No, it's sickening. It's disgusting. I got to tell you, again, I mean, I hate to keep repeating it, but people run into me. They say, oh, you mean you're still banned in England? Where did the lie come out that I was lifted from the ban? I'm still not allowed to go to England for the famous cuisine and to get my dental work done. I mean, I've been trying to get into England for 2 years to have my teeth fixed because they have such superb dental care. Just look at their teeth. But all kidding aside, I'm still banned in England. I'm having a tooth put in for my dentist. Oh, I'm not looking forward to it. I told you what happened. Did you hear this story? You know, they put the titanium pin in your mouth, and they put a tooth, and then a couple of months later, it's like a regular tooth. It's a very good procedure. What happened was, 2 years ago on a December, I had one of these put in, and a few weeks later, I went to dinner with Mitt Romney, of all people. He had actually emailed me, and he asked for a sit-down with me alone. It was like O'Reilly and Obama, but it was in an Italian restaurant. It was in North Beach Restaurant, actually, in San Francisco. My friend Lorenzo owns the place. Great food. We sat in the window, Mitt Romney and I, and I thought we had a very good conversation. And when he raised, I do respect the man. I want to be very clear. And I would choose him over Obama, but he's a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican. You're going to get no action on illegal immigration and on many, many other important points, but you'll get more than you would out of, let us say, a guy like McCain, okay? So I had dinner with Romney. I came home. I was, remember, 2 weeks into this tooth implant, right? I was very, very agitated, excited over the meeting, and I tried to explain it to Mrs. S, and I didn't look, and I bit down on a piece of hard Italian bread, and bingo, I hear a snap, like you break a leg, a ping, and that was the end of that tooth. So then I had to go through the whole procedure, the cadaver bone, that was 4 months until it set in the head. I didn't know what worried me was. I kept jokingly saying to myself, I thought he put a piece of plastic bone in. It turns out, no, it was cadaver bone, which I didn't want. Because then you worry, who was the cadaver? Was it a drunk? Was it a junkie? Was it a communist bone? With a DNA transfer? It's allegedly sterile bone, but I didn't know whether it had been a former worker for the... You know, you didn't own a... So thus far, I see no change in personality. So it's over a year later that the bone has been in my head, and now I can finally have a new pin put in. But it's the last shot. If I break another pin, I'm finished. So what's the challenge? The challenge is to not eat on the right side of my mouth for another 6 months. Okay, that's it. You know, time and gravity catches up with all of us. You know, I was 50 years old when I started in radio. I'd had 3-4 other careers prior to radio. And they said to me, well, who are you? What do you stand for? I said, well, my motto is borders, language, and culture. You see, look, I hope you're listening to me on this show. You listen, a lot of you listen every day religiously. I have one job, and that job is to ask questions that I think many of you would like asked, or to give you observations that you think, you know, if you thought about it long enough, you would come to yourself. You can't come to them yourself because you don't have the time. You're busy raising a family, making a buck, whatever. I have the other considerations as well, but I'm also paid to do something here, and I'm paid very well for it, by the way. As a man with the third largest radio audience in America, make no mistake about it, my radio audience is larger than that of Glenn Beck. And while Glenn Beck's ratings have fallen by 33% on television last year, my ratings have actually gone up on radio. So don't assume because you don't hear my name or see me anywhere that I'm not listened to. I'm an independent, I'm listened to, and I have one job. With all respects for the president, see, and for the respects due the president, I still have an obligation to perform my job the best I can. And my job is to be an independent voice. The day I can't or won't do that is the day you're never going to hear from me again.
Savage.
Look, we've talked about the double talk, the hypocrisy coming out of Obama's White House. They focus on telling us to have better nutrition for everyone, which I've spent my life trying to accomplish for the world. And then they serve bratwurst, pizza, and ice cream for themselves and their friends during the Super Bowl. Joining us now for his look at this is Robert Scott Bell.
Thanks again, Michael. It's great to be back with you and the Savage Nation audience. Let loose on a little bit of health freedom and healing in ways that maybe even the federal government doesn't like us to know about. That's what we're going to do here, and I appreciate the opportunity. This past weekend was interesting because they just released on Monday these new dietary guidelines for all Americans. Yet, if you reviewed like you did the Super Bowl menu at the White House, you have to call this the diet of hypocrisy that's gone out there. Now, interestingly enough, I grew up in an era, Michael, where we had four basic food groups. You remember those? And in my life, they weren't what you think they were. In my life, I grew up in a generation that started eating the wrong things. So my upbringing, we got the four food groups, basically pizza, hot dogs, Coca-Cola, and even throwing some potato chips. Those were four of them, okay? I admit it.
Well, sounds like the cardiotoxic diet I ate as a kid.
Because of that, I was ill for much of my life. My parents didn't know better. We grew up, doctors in the family, the drug reps in the family. And so you got a symptom, you got a drug. There wasn't really anything focused on nutrition as, you know, the reason why as a child I had fallen ill into, believe it or not, chronic illnesses as a child, which it shouldn't befall any child. Those used to be the diseases of old age. And now, of course, when we talk about so many of these diseases, even diabetes, they talk about the increase in diabetes, and you think, okay, all right, more old people are getting diabetes because they're eating wrong and they're doing all the wrong things. But it turns out, Michael, used to be the standard age, if you will, mean age was around 70 for getting diabetes. Now it's dropped to about 40.
Well, how is that possible?
The only way it's possible is, of course, lots of young people are now developing diabetes. And in fact, it's true, the highest rate of growth of diabetes is happening among preteens, children as young as 5 years of age. And I've talked about Nixon's war on cancer, how we got more cancer in almost 40 years since then. And I've joked that the reason we're getting more cancer in children, because it's happening in children too, is that children are living longer. Now they've actually used that argument in diabetes. They're actually saying that, you know, people are living longer.
Wait. Hold on a minute. You can't be serious.
I'm telling you, this is coming right from their own articles and scientific journals. People are living longer, so there's more diabetes.
Oh, my God.
How do they explain kids are the greatest majority of the new diabetes cases? Because, yeah, well, five-year-olds are living longer than five-year-olds used to in the distant past. Of course, it's more absurdity, courtesy of the federal government and the pharmaceutical industrial complex.
Right.
So some of these new guidelines, again, Michelle Obama not paying attention other than to lash out against what Walmart sells you or what you can get at a fast food restaurant. I may not decide to eat there, but I defend people's freedom to eat how they like. But in the so-called prevention of overweight and obesity, they're always focusing, you notice this, Michael, only on calories. Calories in, that's what makes you fat. And then they also say, stay away from fat, when you and I know, and a lot of the Savage Nation audience knows, that fat is not evil. Fat is not bad. In fact, fat is essential for good health, even more so in children. And when I can't stand it when the federal government is pushing, you know, fat-free foods on kids. I mean, these kids need more fat than adults for the development, their normal healthy development.
Mm-hmm.
Neurological, endocrine. I mean, these kids need hormones, for goodness sake, as they're growing. And you wipe out the saturated fat, you wipe out the omega-3 essential fats. I mean, you target cholesterol. Not you, Michael, of course, but, I mean, these dietary guidelines coming from the feds. They're saying consume less than 300 milligrams per day of dietary cholesterol, neglecting the fact that even if you eat a high cholesterol diet, it impacts on your cholesterol levels minimally because most cholesterol is produced endogenously because the liver needs it. The liver is critical. It produces the cholesterol because, as you've said so many times on your show, it's a vital precursor for hormones like testosterone, progesterone, and estrogen. It's a protective mechanism so you can even live long enough to have a heart attack.
Exactly.
For goodness sake, we're not endorsing heart attacks, but the reality is, without cholesterol, we would die before we'd have any sign or symptom because of the oxidative damage, the inflammation within the cardiovascular system. So, again, big surprise, the feds get the dietary guidelines absolutely wrong. You want to be unhealthy, listen to what the feds tell you to eat. Also, I wanted to reiterate that the fat issue, even when we talk about saturated fat is not unhealthy in and of itself. It's what's in the saturated fat that can be problematic. And people that don't concern themselves with the way, for instance, those that eat animal protein, if you don't give a flip how the animals are raised, you're largely ignorant of the fact that what you put into your body does matter. You know, if you want to eat animal protein, then make sure, for goodness sake, that the animals are not hopped up on steroids or growth hormones from synthetic manufacturers around the world. Also, not pumped full of antibiotics just to fatten them up and bring them to market faster. We already have enough antibiotic-resistant strains of microbes that were created by man, not by God, and they're only making it worse because the majority of antibiotics used are actually not used on humans, but in the artificial growth of animals. Said to slaughter. And of course, those fats are loaded with nasty stuff. If you're feeding these animals crap, what do you expect you're going to get when you eat them?
Exactly.
You know, heavy metals, pesticide residues, these things matter. They impact negatively on the, let's say, the function or the even presence of hormones and enzymes, the vital elements necessary for healthy life and graceful aging. You know, it begs the question, all of this misinformation that's purposefully perpetrated upon the American people by the federal government, telling us what we can and can't eat, what's good for us, what's not, and they don't even know how to eat in Washington, D.C. And I have to ask the question, you know, what is the end result, not only of the promotion, but of Americans eating junk, eating food that you may perceive to be healthy, but it's loaded with things that are not life-sustaining? And, of course, for me, in my mind, I look at, okay, what is it doing and why is it doing it? And anything that, let's say, facilitates disease in the body, weakens us, weakens our mind, weakens our ability to be human, we are much more malleable as a species, as a people, as the American people have put up with so much garbage from the federal government, from Obamacare, to other unconstitutional growth of government, Department of Education. I mean, it used to be the Republicans were actually wanting to abolish it. And we even go into the Twinkies of the money with the Federal Reserve printing up paper like, you know, they're going to wallpaper the planet so we can all have more money. And, of course, it only makes the money we work hard to get worth less and less. We never catch up with the real inflation. Which, by the way, the brilliant Bernanke from his helicopter can't even acknowledge that inflation is not the rise in prices, but the increase in the money supply, much like the increase in the access to junk food, for which Michelle Obama says, oh, we don't want you to have that, will result, of course, in other deficiency diseases because many of these foods, hey, let's face it, it plain doesn't contain the vitamins, minerals, and trace minerals that was once in food grown in healthy soil. I mean, we have to go to sea vegetation, seaweed, to get our minerals now. At least it's still there. But we've got other crazy ideas coming out of the feds, and again, they're all about calories, never acknowledging the impact of eating calories that are devoid of minerals, like, for instance, chromium. We've talked about this before, Michael. If you eat refined carbohydrates, I mean, that, a lot of the empty calories, the sugars, it's not just that that may be bad, but the fact that they don't have the chromium molecules, particles, present with the sugars. And chromium, of course, facilititates the use of insulin, facilitates the transmission, if we will, of energy in the body. And, of course, hypoglycemia, which is resulting from a lack of chromium, much less the diabetes that is also evidence of a lack of chromium because it's been refined out of the food. We have a serious consideration here is to say, why is the government not saying, hey, we need to remove some of these refined foods and acknowledge that we need these minerals in the food?
Oh, right.
And which leads me to discovery of a bioweapon.
Really?
I recently discovered a bioweapon that the federal government knows about and that every American has that could turn back the tides of the artificial growth, the cancer of big government, unconstitutional government, and it relates to this idea of the federal government purposefully wanting us to be weak and sickened by food that is not whole, organic, and unprocessed. From the four food groups to the pyramid, the food pyramid, to the 12 pyramids. Go back to ancient Egypt. There are the feds confusing everybody. Never a mention of organic, whole, unprocessed foods as a basis for healthy life. And, the power to heal belongs to the people, not to a federal agency like the Food and Drug Administration, which limits the awareness of people that food matters, that food, in fact, can be your medicine, and that your medicine can be food.
Well, why are they against people knowing this?
Well, that is a very, very important question to ask, and it leads me to, why I want to hit into this new bioweapon that the Savage Nation listeners should know about, because it's very powerful indeed in rolling back the power of government, and yet it can harm none of the American people. None of our neighbors would be harmed by this. They all have it. But, first and foremost, we do want to acknowledge the hypocrisy of the Obama White House, Michelle Obama. They're telling you low fat, no cholesterol. And what was on the White House Super Bowl menu? Bratwurst. Michael, how many calories, how much fat is in bratwurst? How much cholesterol? Which, again, we're not against, but, they would say, oh, stay away from it. Kielbasas? How about some cheeseburgers? Oh, yeah. That's not going to throw any of the things that Michelle doesn't want thrown at you, but it's okay. In the White House, could we have a little bit of cholesterol-laden cheese on our deep-dish pizza at the White House, Michael? Yes, that's there as well. You got buffalo wings. You got German potato salad. I'm sure there's no mayo in that. And twice-baked potatoes. Oh, with extra butter and sour cream, please, for me. And they talk about potato chips and pretzels. I think the last time I checked out, originally part of my four food group, I think it's considered junk food. But they did throw in a salad there for good measure. I wonder if it was one Michelle grew right on the White House lawns contaminated with heavy metals. Good question there. I don't know if we have the answer. But maybe that was to counterbalance the ice cream that they all enjoyed at the Super Bowl party.
Well, it's another case of do as I say, not as I do.
Why do we listen to these people telling us what to eat? And the fact is, if the American people are so weak-minded, so deficient that we need politicians and bureaucrats and first ladies to tell us how to eat, then maybe we don't deserve to be free, Michael. I mean, I hate to say that, but you wonder if we're so weak and lacking in independent thought that we need the feds to tell us what to eat. Perhaps we deserve all that the federal government is throwing at us.
I see what you mean.
So this brings me back to the bioweapon. What is this power that I had found it is contained within the entirety of the American people? All the American people have it. And it would stop cold, and that's why the federal government is dreading any knowledge or awareness of this new bioweapon.
Why do you say that?
Why do I call it a bioweapon? Because it's contained within your biology, within your very existence. And I talk about the germ theory and the law of the terrain. We acknowledge the terrain, the milieu, the environment. That's what determines health or disease. And so what is this terrain that allows the federal government to grow beyond its constitutional limitations, and how is it possible? By consent of the governed.
Hmm.
We have given so much consent, so much power away that belongs with the states and the people that we deserve almost what we're getting. Why would we have unconstitutional government? We consent to it. So what we need to do, if the voting the bums out doesn't work and all the other stuff that we do doesn't work, we come back to that origin point of the founding of the nation. The government exists only with the consent of the governed. And give Washington, D.C. a consent deficiency disease where it is unconstitutional, withdraw your consent. Much like the movement with the 10th Amendment Center and nullification, nullify them now. Withdraw consent for things that are unconstitutional. You have it not because the Declaration of Independence gave it to you, not because the Constitution gave it to you, not because the Bill of Rights gave it to you. Your rights, my rights, our rights come from a far higher place than government. They come from that which created us all. So consent deficiency disease, that's good for America, and that's good to restore constitutional governance. Hey, get it back to where it belongs.
Thanks for the report, Robert.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be with you as always, and I want to thank you for the opportunity. Please send the Savage Nation audience to naturalnews.com/Robert Scott Bell, and they can get a lot more there.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
A lot of news, there's no news. It's the best of times, it's the worst of times. You know, we could talk about news, we could talk not about the news, we could talk about Chinese food, Italian food, I'd say Irish food, but there is none. I'm joking, don't get mad. I've been in enough Irish bars to tell you that they're not known for that, okay? Let's not get angry now all of a sudden. Don't bring up anger now. Start telling me dishes with lamb, okay? Chicago, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I wanted to know what health benefits, if any, are provided by the squid ink and squid ink pasta.
I give you the philosophy of 1,000 years of evolution. Don't seek excitement, seek fulfillment. I get a question about squid ink. All right, that's the nature of the business I'm in. Wait, I will refer to the Bible, Deuteronomy 27:12. If a caller asketh thou about squid ink after thou hast given thy heart and thy mind, tell him to shove it! I know, you don't actually find that in Deuteronomy. You will not actually find it. I don't think they deal with squid. I think it's one of the banned foods. Thou shalt not suffer a sorceress to live. I don't want to go into that. There's too many people in San Francisco. Everything that thou shalt not do, they do. And in Emenclaw, Washington, don't even ask. Wow. In Emenclaw, they actually look at Exodus 22 and do everything it's told not to do. A sorceress, a beast. He had lieth with a beast. They love the beasts up in Emenclaw, Washington. In fact, they get them from rescue centers in order to lieth with them. It's horrible. An eye for an eye. You got to look those things up, an eye for an eye. Thou shalt not cover. I don't want to read the Bible. Leave me alone. I'm tired of religious now. I'm off religion. I think I'm giving up on the whole religious thing for a while. I am so jaundiced on religion and religious. I know you're going to be disappointed, but I'm not doing any religion. I don't like it. We talk about radical Islam. How about radical everything else? You know, I know that the radical Christians don't kill and this and that today, but, you know, to me, the fanatics in religion worry me greatly. Just as the fanatics in government worry me greatly. I don't like fanaticism. So I'll say, well, you're a fanatic because you believe in borders, language, culture. All right, so you define your enemy as a fanatic, whatever you want to say. I just don't, I'm not into this whole religious thing. I think it's a racket. This organized religion bothers me. Sure, I believe in God. I'm going to give me the litmus test. First of all, it's my business whether I do or not, but I do. Why? Because I'm afraid that if I gamble wrongly, I'll be cast into you know where for eternity. So I have that basic, let us say, primal or childish view of the world. If you're braver than me and you don't care what happens to you after you die, all right, whatever. I was raised another way, and that's the end of the story. That's how I shall be. I'm pretty sure there's a creator. But truthfully, I can get closer to God through an elephant and through a gorilla and giving to the gorilla fund and the elephant fund and seeing that anyone who poaches a gorilla and cuts his hand off, they hunt them down and they knock them off. You know, I mean, I gave money to a group that hires a military to go out and kill mountain gorilla, because they should. And then the ones who cut the tusks off elephants are the wonderful, sensitive, kindly Asians in North Korea. So I made up a statement. He who saves a single elephant, it is as though he has saved the entire herd. Mark it down. It's a takeoff on the Maimonides thing. He who saves a single life, it is as though he saved the entire world. Which is true. But at this point, I'd rather save an elephant. I have more faith now in the elephants and the gorillas than I do in human beings. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the racket. I'm sick of the red and the black. You know, I read it years ago, the whole red and the black thing, where the only way to get ahead in Napoleonic France was, remember Stendhal's great book? I think it was Stendhal, wasn't it? The Red and the Black? French writer, the book was called The Red and the Black, and it was about a young man who's ambitious in France, and he's trying to look ahead in his life, and how does he get ahead? There's only two ways to get ahead in Napoleonic France, either through the red or the black, either wearing the red of the uniform or the black of the priesthood. And it's about this aggressive individual who's, you know, ambitious. And he has to choose either the red or the black. Nothing's changed here, and in some ways, I mean, the military's not going to give you any great, let us say, external rewards in our country.
Savage.